politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
There was an article that came out a few weeks ago that said our cars might know more about what goes on in the backseat than we think.
And it's not just our cars. Everything we buy, even our kids' holiday toys, could be spying on us.
Today's guest is going to help us figure out what products to avoid.
So welcome to What the Hack, a show about hackers, scammers, and the people they go after. I'm Adam Levin.
I'm Beau Friedlander.
And I'm Travis Taylor.
So, Jen, you cover technology for CNN. That's before you joined Mozilla. And we know that Mozilla is probably best known for Firefox, the web browser. But there's a whole lot more to Mozilla than just that. So can you tell us other work that Mozilla does online?
Oh, yeah. Like you said, Mozilla, most people know us for Firefox, but we're actually a nonprofit. We're not like the big tech giants like Google and all that are out there trying to make a bunch of money. We're a nonprofit organization. Basically, our mission is to make the internet better for everybody all around the world.
I just talked to several people about how my work pants were not cutting it and I needed new pants, and I was served several ads for pants.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways to make the internet better, right? Not having the walled gardens of the Facebooks and the Twitters or the X's or whatever they're called these days. Making the internet open and accessible to everybody. Making sure that people have equal access to the internet through their connections. Lobbying for strong consumer legislation in places like the EU and the United States. Ad tech is one part of it. Transparency into the technology that we're using every day so we know if that AI algorithm has our best interests at heart or is it trained on really biased stuff.
This is where I would normally ask the question, how's that working out for us? Anyway, can you tell us a little more about the walled gardens of Facebook and Google?
The internet used to be fairly open, and anybody with a little bit of technical ability could get on and connect through a message board or create a little post and post it and put it out there. And that was nice. And you didn't have to sign up for a privacy policy or a privacy invading platform like Facebook, for example. But then Facebook came along and it made it really easy for everybody to connect with each other. And so everybody hopped on Facebook and started posting content and started friending people and started seeing ads and clicking on them or talking about things. And so Facebook wanted to keep everybody there so they could learn more about you, so they could target you with more ads, but also own your content. So what you posted there, Facebook had some control over. And so that's the walled garden that we're talking about.
Speaking of privacy, you started Privacy Not Included. What exactly does that do?
Privacy Not Included is an idea that came about back in 2017 when we were focusing more on privacy as these Internet of Things connected devices started exploding into our homes. And we're like, people care about privacy. Should they be worried about the smart speaker, the fitness tracker coming into their home? And we looked around and saw a lot of review sites that reviewed products for features, reliability, things like that. But there was nobody telling people what to be concerned about when it came to privacy and security. And so the idea for a buyer's guide to help people shop for connected devices and products came about. And originally it was just an idea. But I stumbled across a researcher who worked on the Mozilla Corporation side who was looking into connected devices privacy. And so that's how Privacy Not Included was born. We've reviewed hundreds of products. You can search by categories like wearables or mental health apps or cars or entertainment. There's a creepometer where you can vote and tell us how creepy you think a product is.
That would be a good thing for us to maybe try and get Bumble and Tinder and Grindr and all the other places to adopt it, because it would be useful in the dating scene.
Also, you know, I think we could do self-creepometers too, which would be an interesting thing. But aside from all of that, how do you research products for Privacy Not Included?
The way that we research privacy and security at Mozilla is we approach it like we're consumers. So we think, okay, what's the publicly available information that we can find out there that we can use to decide if this product is good or bad at privacy? But also, we email every company at the address usually listed in a privacy policy for privacy-related questions to try and get answers to some of our questions, also to see if they're responsive to people emailing their privacy questions and their privacy policies, or if that's just for show. We do a lot of like just literature review, looking at what's been said and written about products, FTC fines, European fines. We just dig through everything that we can find publicly. It takes a while. A lot of privacy policy reading, it can get boring, but having done it for years, it's actually fascinating what you see in privacy policies and the humor that we've been able to find in things that we read now, which maybe is only interesting to privacy nerds. You know, we get a kick out of it.
Privacy is something we all understand innately. We're just talking about our day-to-day life. Why is privacy so important when it comes to our digital lives?
I grew up, and I think most of us on this call grew up at a time when we had some privacy. You know, we had the ability to disappear from view and learn some lessons out of the public view and take away from them, but also create ourselves, our own lives in a way that wasn't influenced by anybody else, but our own mistakes and what we learned from them. And I really fear for people growing up in the world today where they don't have that amount of privacy, whether it's parents tracking kids everywhere all the time by strapping a smartwatch on them at the age of 4 or 5, to companies learning everything they can about us from the moment that we get online and using that to try and guide our behaviors, so that if I'm 20 and I decide I really tried to like sports because my dad likes sports, but I just can't do it and I want to get away from it, I feel guilty, but these ads follow me everywhere. But then you scale it up and you see what can happen when governments or bad actors can get a hold of our behavioral data, where these algorithms can start to know a lot more about us than we even perhaps know about them ourselves.
You made such a great point. We all do need to have experiences and learn things on our own without an audience. And when you're a child, that's especially true, because sometimes you get some guidance that doesn't feel great. You have to incorporate it. And that's not a fun process. And nowadays, kids can figure it out on their Finsta, talking to their friends who are looking at TikTok. And it's no longer a personal experience of growth. It is this kind of algorithm poisoned trajectory.
Jen, you had mentioned that in your privacy nerdish experiences, you've come across some humorous things in privacy policies. I'm dying to know, what do you think is the most humorous thing you ever found in a privacy policy?
Oh my gosh. I'm on the spot here. So let me try and recall. One that I particularly like, and this is Huawei, huge Chinese company, sells a lot of tech, not in the United States, but elsewhere around the world. They sell a lot of tech like smartwatches and phones and things like that. And they make a smartwatch for kids, as do a number of other companies, but they make a smartwatch for kids. And we were researching them last year. And a lot of companies will have their privacy policy, and then you can dig around and try and find a privacy policy specific to kids. Like Amazon will have one and all that. And I was trying to find that for Huawei because they had a smartwatch for kids. I was like, And it took me a long time to find it. But eventually I found this privacy policy for kids' privacy on Huawei products. And in it, it said, "Dear kids, you must make your parents read this privacy policy before you use the app." I paraphrased a little bit there, but that was basically what the privacy policy said. And I just had to chuckle thinking, This is a smartwatch for kids, made for kids as young as 4 to 6. And I'm just imagining some 6-year-old kid having spent 2 hours like I did trying to find this children's privacy policy, reading it, and then running to their parent going, "Mommy, Daddy, I can't wear this watch until you read this privacy policy. This says I'm not allowed." And it's absolutely not going to happen. But it exists because some lawyer somewhere said, "Oh, we got to cover our butts on this. So here we go." It's similar to the privacy policies that we read for cars that said that anybody that gets in your car, you need to let them know of this company's privacy practices as their passenger, and they've agreed to this privacy policy. And it's just ridiculous to think that would ever happen.
So Jen, let's focus on cars. Okay, so you're reporting on the privacy setting of cars, or the complete and utter lack of privacy settings on cars. It made headlines a while back, and you call them the worst product category we have ever reviewed for privacy.
Oh, well, it wasn't hard to come up with that title. I mean, in part because we reviewed 25 car brands, Ford, BMW, Nissan, Kia, Volkswagen, across the board. Every single car brand that we reviewed earned our privacy not included warning label. And that was a first. Now, no product category we've ever reviewed has earned every single one is awful. And our goal is to help people to make smart decisions. And so when you review a category of products, especially cars, it's not like, oh, I bought a bad product and it's terrible, I'm going to discard it and get a better one. It's cars.
One thing that really stood out from that reporting was that Kia, the car manufacturer, tracks, among other things, the sexual activity of the people who use their cars. I have a lot of questions about that, but the two biggest are, A, how are they tracking that? And B, why? What benefit is there to know who's getting jiggy in a Sorento?
It's a really good question. And I get asked this question about the sexual activity tracking a lot, because it is. It makes your eyes bulge out of your head. And it wasn't just Kia. Nissan also mentioned that they can track your sexual activity. They don't say how. They say what they do is they have a privacy policy that you must consent to in order to use their product, in this case, a car, as well as the app and the connected services. And in that privacy policy, you must consent to a privacy policy that says they could collect information on your sex life or your sexual activity. And in Nissan's case, use that potentially for direct advertising activities. And so they don't tell you how they're collecting it. They don't tell you why they're collecting it, other than some general, potentially direct marketing activities. Or they don't even actually say that we don't even know 100% that they are. I mean, the car companies themselves will say, oh, we're not actually tracking that, which is fine for them to say. But at the end of the day, they require you to consent to a privacy policy where it says that they can't. As to the why they need this, any behavioral data point that a company builds on you and builds a profile gives them the ability to target you more closely with ads. And so almost all of these privacy policies also say that they can collect all this data on you, including things like your sexual activity, and use it to create inferences. And it sounds kind of innocuous, but think about that. They say they can create inferences about things like your intelligence, your predispositions, your abilities. And then if you really break that down and you think, oh, great, Subaru knows that I really am not that smart and I have a predisposition to eat pizza every Friday night and 18 other things about me. And then they can really target you in ways that's scary. And it's not just, you know, it's the car company that can target you. This data gets bundled up and attached to you and then shared around or sold around to places where other people can target you. And that's where it starts to get really worrisome.
Besides the tracking of sexual activity, as you're reviewing all these privacy policies, what was the most shocking thing that you found?
There's a few shocking things. One was just the huge amounts of data that these cars and connected services and apps can collect on you. And it's huge. Alongside your phone, it's the biggest data collecting thing that we've ever come across. They aren't shy about all the data that they say they can collect on you from the cars, the apps, and the connected services. And so that was really eye-opening. It's one thing to use an app that can collect a little bit of information about you and have that shared and sold, but cars can collect so much about you. Where you're going, there's sensors inside, there's microphones inside, there's cameras inside and facing outside. You connect your phone to it. There's just huge amounts of data. And so that's something that's really scary to think that you're sharing it with car companies. And let's remember, a lot of these car companies don't have the best ethical track records over the past century or so. You think about the Ford Pinto and you think about Volkswagen and their diesel emissions scandal. And there's tons of scandals that these car companies had where they've been less than ethical. And so you're giving them on a plate tons of information. So that was one of the scariest things. We joke about the sexual activity, and that's crazy, but the inferences thing really gets me, because this is, again, companies making decisions about you based on some data points that they have, and then using that to try and manipulate your behavior, whether that's to buy a product or vote for a candidate or attend a rally or what. I really don't need big corporations inferring my intelligence or my predispositions or my abilities. That it just creeps me out in a way that is really hard to vocalize. But then the third thing that really got me, that I struggle with a lot, is how easily these car companies said that they could share data with law enforcement and government. And this is something that I've thought about a lot since we reviewed reproductive health apps last year following the overturning of Roe versus Wade. Knowing that if you live in a state that outlaws abortion, law enforcement has a lot of leniency to track you as a woman, especially, and where you're going and what you're doing and your health care. And that gets really scary. And then you have car companies that can collect tons and tons of data, more than reproductive health apps. And we saw some car companies say they could share data with law enforcement and government based solely on informal requests. So we're not talking a court order or even a formal request. We're just talking an informal request, which I just imagine is like the local sheriff down at the bar with his buddy going, hey, can you give me that information on so-and-so? And that gets really scary to me, because that bar needs to be a lot higher for that information to be shared.
Makes you feel like this vehicle has become a stalking unit.
Especially when cars used to be our independence and our freedom and, you know, where you'd go to, you know, make out with your high school significant other or goof off with your friends, sing at the top of your lung, you know, have sensitive conversation with your kids. And you think about all the stuff, cars are extensions of our homes. We would really freak out if our homes had this level of surveillance in them. And I really hope people are a little freaked out that our cars do now.
This spring, get out there, enjoy the weather, and recapture the magic of riding a bike with Electric e-bike.
With an amazing variety of models built for riders of all abilities, it's never been easier to fall in love with riding again. Plus, every electric e-bike ships free and only requires quick, toolless assembly.
This is my first ever e-bike, and the experience has just been great. I was a little bit intimidated at first because I hadn't gone biking in a while, but the 500-watt motor that the electric e-bike comes with really gives you a nice little boost, especially if you're trying to go uphill or pick up some speed.
Data shows that e-bike riders take their bike out more often. That means you get more exercise, more exploration, and wait for it, fresh air.
And riding an e-bike isn't like, it's not cheating. It's just making it possible for you to be out there longer on each ride. And speaking of things going a little slower, you can finance an electric e-bike for as little as $49 a month.
Get into spring with Electric e-bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com. And please mention that What the Heck with Adam Levin sent you in the post-checkout survey.
That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
So here's the deal. I use Yahoo Finance. I use it to make money because it works. Not just because they're a sponsor of the show. Heck, I've been using them for years before they ever called to become a sponsor. I do a lot of investing, and I need to make split-second financial decisions, and that's where Yahoo Finance comes in. I trade stocks, and I trade options, and you can't trade them in a vacuum. You've got to know what's going on. Yahoo Finance gives you the opportunity to look at the whole picture. I mean, breaking news, editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts. I love the customizable charts. They have it all. At Yahoo Finance, I'm part of a community of over 90 million users. You heard me. 90 million folks use Yahoo Finance because they're helping you on your way to financial success. Visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination. That's yahoofinance.com, yahoofinance.com.
As a parent, I'm certainly concerned about internet-connected toys. And I know that Privacy Not Included has done a lot of research on holiday gifts, especially toys. What are some of the things that you found there?
Yeah, we are in the midst of researching for our holiday guide, and there's a growing number of connected toys for kids. Some of them are absolutely fine. Some of these, interestingly, like iRobot, the company that makes Roomba, makes a coding toy for kids called Root. iRobot has really good privacy and security, so it's not something you need to worry overly much about, we don't think. A lot of these toys are just little Bluetooth connected things that are going to connect to an app and do some Bluetooth stuff that probably isn't that worrisome from a privacy perspective, but I would always caution if you buy that Bluetooth connected stuffed animal or whatever, when you download the app, just check on the permissions that it asks for. This wants access to your microphone. Okay, well, the kid's going to talk to it. That makes sense. It also wants access to your phone's camera. That doesn't make sense because there's no picture taking. I was reviewing Wyze Cams yesterday, and I noticed that their app for their smart home devices wants to read your text messages. I was like, why does it need to read my text messages? So that's something to look at. But you're also growing into more connected kids' toys areas where you're starting to see this year for the first time, we're seeing, and still in the midst of reviewing, so I don't have final verdicts on them, but these ChatGPT-powered kids' toys that are like your AI kid's friend. And then I'm like, I don't know about that. That one needs a little more thinking. And then my personal least favorite gift for kids, which is smartwatches for kids. I don't have kids myself, so I'll say that. I understand why parents would want to track their kids from a safety perspective and know where they are and be able to reach them and use smartwatches in lieu of cell phones, especially for younger kids. However, the thought of kids as young as 4 being tracked everywhere, having a microphone and a camera strapped on their wrist that can receive text message or calls at any time, that can track your chores and give your kid a ping if it's not doing their chores or if they're staying awake reading or something, that just worries me as a privacy advocate because, again, it gets to I get where it helps parents feel secure, but it just gets into this, we're training kids from such a young age to live in a surveillance state. And what is that going to do for their mental health? So those are some of my initial thoughts. I don't know if I addressed any specific concern, but those are some of my initial thoughts on toys for kids.
How much information is really being collected about kids as they interact with toys?
It's a great question. You know, the FTC fined Amazon this year millions of dollars for not actually following through on their promise to delete voice recordings that they'd collected on kids. In the US, we have a law that, you know, and you read privacy policies and it says, oh, we don't knowingly collect any data on children under the age of 13. In Europe, I think it's 16. But children over the age of 13 aren't exactly ready to have all their data collected on them either, I don't think. There's just a lot of data that you have to assume is being collected. But my best advice is don't trust the companies with your kids' data. Keep them as far away from that as you can. I recognize that's impossible, though.
My kids are grown. I'm not buying toys for anyone at the moment. I might, actually. If my sister's listening, yes, my niece and nephew may be getting some toys from me. I want to get something that isn't creepy. Is there anything out there that has some whiz-bang that isn't creepy?
Do books still have whiz bang? Because I remember being a kid and books were just always, you could never go wrong with a book.
100%. Yeah.
Books are cool. They've got pictures if you get the right one. Some of them have pop-ups. Remember pop-up books? There's some really amazingly interactive books out there, interactive in an analog way. And they have a lot of whiz bang. And gosh, I'm just books, man. Let's get kids books these days.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for getting kids books, but still, kids do like tech gifts. Do you have any recommendations as far as that's concerned?
There are a few things that I feel pretty comfortable recommending. I'm a consumer of tech stuff. I have tech things. Garmin fitness trackers are actually fairly good at privacy. Yes, they collect a lot of stuff. Potentially, they also have smartwatches for kids. So I've already made that clear how I feel about those. But Garmin's a company that I'm like, okay, Garmin, you're not bad. And last year we dinged them because they didn't guarantee everybody the same right to delete their data, which we think everybody, regardless of where you live, whether you live under a strong privacy law or not, should have the right to delete your data. We dinged them. They followed up with us on that and we told them why. And they said, oh, we'll discuss that when we meet to discuss our privacy policy next. They've changed that. Now everybody has the same right to delete their data. So Garmin is a company. If your kid wants some sort of fitness tracker, smartwatch, Garmin's not bad. Some of the STEM toys, the, hey, learn to code or learn how to do a chemistry set or things like that, some of those aren't so bad. So there are some options that aren't terrible. But for the most part, you got to be careful. You just got to be careful. Even headphones. I was reading the privacy policy for Bose headphones yesterday, and they can track your head movements when you have your headphones on. And that falls under the list of information that about you that they can associate. I think they can associate with you through your email address or your IP address. And then I played out a scenario that I don't know if it happens at all or not, but it was just a scenario I played out based on reading their privacy policy, that they know that they can track what content I'm listening to. They can track if my head's moving, and they can track my email address, and says that they can sell this under the California privacy law definition of sell that to advertisers. And I was like, so they could potentially know if I'm listening to Jordan Peterson podcast and really nodding my head in agreement, and perhaps infer that I'm 16-year-old boy without a girlfriend. This was, again,
but you
something...
might not be. But you might not be an incel. You might just be someone who likes P-funk and you're dancing.
It could be. But these are the things that I sit around and worry about as a privacy researcher. It's my job to play out those worst case scenarios. So maybe it's not that bad, but it could be.
Jen, are there any known brands that have a pretty good track record for kids' electronics?
It's hard because kids' toys are tricky. Nintendo used to be a fairly good company, but they earned our privacy not included warning label last year. The kids and toy stuff is really hard, but I've struggled with that for years because there are just so many. It's just such a weird ecosystem that, you know, it's not like there's just one company or three companies that, yeah. I mean, there's like Hasbro, but that all that stuff is like Bluetooth or, you know, VTech that have a lot of connected toys that, but they're mostly connected through Bluetooth or even just direct connect to your computer. So they aren't that big of a concern. But it's really hard to know. And if you're buying off-brand toys, you know, just take a peek at the app, take a peek at the microphone or the camera, and they kind of boil down to, is the connection safe? Can you trust the camera? Can you trust the microphone? Can you trust the company?
Some of us have seen Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and we remember the child catcher. He seemed like he had nice candy. He seemed like it was a fun place to go, and then he threw them all in a dungeon.
Wasn't that movie just about a car or something?
And that's why we had Jen here, by the way, full circle. And that was a very clever car. And I'm sure it knew all sorts of things about sexual activity because it was sentient. But anyway, do we have privacy anymore?
Oh, gosh, that's a big question. Do we have privacy anymore? We don't have privacy like we used to. Absolutely not. That no longer exists. You can no longer be anonymous in the world unless you choose to live so far off the grid that you're not really part of society. I mean, I live on 64 acres in the middle of Lake Champlain in Vermont. I'm about as private as you can get in a lot of ways, but I still recognize, I mean, I have cameras on the outside of my house, mostly to see the deer. Is there all around, but there they exist. I know that I research products all day long. What Google knows about my search history is pretty vast. I know that when I go into a town that I'm going to be under surveillance from any number of cameras that are either publicly owned by the government or privately owned by businesses. I know that my car has microphones in it. We don't live in a world where privacy exists like it used to, but I got to be optimistic a little bit, but we do still have some options. They're getting less and less, and I lay awake every night having an existential crisis about this. Literally, does any of this matter? What can we do about it? And this is what I think. In any social movement, there's a tipping point. There's a tipping point where the people that kind of soldier on the issue, soldier in an anonymity, and then something big happens, and then everybody cares. And then change happens. And I feel like when it comes to privacy, we're in that soldiering along right now. Like, we have to keep screaming from the mountaintops that privacy is a valuable thing to humans and we need it and we've got to fight for it. And nothing's going to change right now, but there will be a tipping point. I believe that there will be a tipping point where people get freaked out enough that there's going to be pushback. Pushbacks on the governments and pushback on the companies, and we'll take back some of our privacy. I have to believe that. And so, yes, privacy is rare these days, and it's hard to come by, and you have to do a lot of work to maintain any level of privacy as a person who exists in our society. But that doesn't mean that we should give up, and it doesn't mean that we shouldn't pay attention. And in some ways, it means that the more people we can bring along with us when that tipping point happens, the more we'll be ready for it. And so that's how I convince myself to get up every day and keep doing what I do.
What can we do, at least in the short term, to make the internet less creepy?
I can tell people to go in and adjust your settings and ask Google to delete your information and tell your go to your phone and turn off track location, and then it'll tell you none of your apps will work. And I can tell you to do all that, and that will help a little bit until the next update and they opt you back in and all that. And I know I'm sounding like a Debbie Downer here, but I think the one thing that your listeners can do to make the internet less creepy right now is to get mad and just get really angry about the situation that we're in right now. And be like, this is enough. And call somebody. Call your elected official. Call a representative. Call the FTC. Just call people and say, privacy matters. And we're losing it. And we don't have a federal privacy law in the United States, especially one that's consumer focused. And we need one. And data brokers are creepy. And I don't know how they work. And every time anybody tries to do any legislation about them, they throw their hands up in the air and say, oh, we don't have a direct relationship with consumers. So we shouldn't have to comply with consumer laws. And so I think the one thing that people are going to do to make the internet less creepy is get really mad and start calling people that can make change.
You've just had your Peter Finch moment. Let's all open our windows and get mad as hell. If there is one thing that you wanted people to be more aware of when it comes to their privacy, just one, what is it?
That it matters. And I know everybody says when you people pull them, everybody says that their privacy matters. I also know that then people are like, but I don't know what I can do about it. And so, yes, your privacy matters. And here's the one thing you can do about it. You can demand either at your state level or at the federal level, strong privacy regulations. Again, the U.S. doesn't have a federal privacy law. The EU has GDPR, which protects them to a degree. We don't have that. And we don't want the tech companies and the car companies to write that federal privacy law either. I would say that get informed, because your privacy matters. The more we give it up, the less happy we're going to be. So the one thing that people should know about their privacy is that it matters enough to pick up the phone and make a phone call to demand better and not expect. It's not fair for the companies to expect you to spend 8 hours a day knowing what settings need to be adjusted, or they just updated their privacy policy and opted you into things. It's not fair for you as a consumer to have that burden put on you. The burden needs to be on the companies, and the burden needs to be on the regulators.
Jen, you're awesome. And we got to do this again. And anyway, thank you. This was fabulous.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Let's talk about weight loss. Most of us have been there, struggling with the ups and downs. You lose some weight, then it creeps back.
But forget those endless cycles of juice cleanses, soup diets, and the latest fad workouts. There's a better way.
The Rogue Body Program pairs a weekly weight loss shot with a real lifestyle change so you can lose weight and actually keep it off.
Need support? Rogue's got you covered every step of the way. And guess what? You can do it all from the comfort of your own home. No more doctor's appointments, no more waiting rooms. It's that simple.
Ready to take charge of your weight? Head over to ro.co/Adam to sign up today.
Average weight loss is 15 to 20% in a year. That's with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/Adam.
Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 after that. Medication costs are separate.
That's ro.co/ADAM.
And now it's time for a Tinfoil Swan.
Our paranoid takeaway to keep you safe on and offline.
Okay, this seems like a timely topic. What is the first thing someone can do to make their home a little more cybersecure?
I think one of the biggest ones is just to silo your home Wi-Fi network.
What does that mean exactly?
It means you can set up separate Wi-Fi networks on one internet connection. The average house has over 20 internet-connected devices on it, and you do not need to have all of them on the same network. A lot of them are a security nightmare. So what you can do is just say, like, my kid's Fire tablet, my internet-connected TV are on one network, but the computer I use to work is on the other. It's easier to set up than you think it would be. Adam, what do you have?
Change the default password on your router. I mean, we know that encryption has certainly improved over the years, but your home network is only as secure as the password to access. So if you're currently using a factory default password, or if you haven't set up a password, it's time to start using a long and unguessable password. Bo, what's number three?
I hate all of these, but I'm gonna, I think it's dumb. You're secure or not secure, someone hacks you. So, Travis, I'm just going to kick it to you. Go ahead. Go ahead. Hack me, anybody. Go ahead.
Okay. This is one we've talked about before, but choose a theme for your device names.
Like Bob?
Like what?
Well, not Bob, but if you're looking at your home network and it says John, Paul, George, Ringo, Bob's iMac, then you know that there's something on there that shouldn't be.
Dude, you just ran out of all the things it could be. You have four. That's
okay.
It. They're done.
The RZA, the Jizza, Inspected Deck, Ghostface Killa,
okay,
Mastakilla.
Okay.
One of the other ones is just doing a regular security audit on yourself. Check your accounts. Take a look and see if there's anything weird on there that you don't really recognize. Conduct regular internet searches of yourself, your friends and family, just to see if there's something out there that you don't want up.
I heartily endorse what I'm about to say, which is apply patches and updates. Apps and hardware are updated all the time, and it's always important. So don't be like, I don't really care about that. Don't be like me when I'm talking about siloing your networks. You can be like Travis if you want to be like Travis, and you probably will never get hacked, but you'll never have any fun.
I have lots of fun.
And if you want to know why you should apply a patch and an update, Equifax. That's called the Equifax rule.
Oh, yeah, well, that's true. So that's our tinfoil swan. I hope that you learned something, you weirdos.
What the Hack with Adam Levin is a production of Loud Tree Media. You can find us online at adamlevin.com and on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Adam K. Levin.